Support for the Exchange Podcast from NHPR comes from you, our listeners,
and from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own-farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. New Hampshire's economy has a lot going for it right now, but state economists are keeping a concerned eye on several national policy trends. One is the federal government shutdown. Another is trade, both with repercussions here. We'll cover that today on The Exchange. Also, state economic priorities recently put forward by the Sununu administration, by the governor himself and his top business development advisor. It's our New Hampshire Economic Roundup today in The Exchange, and let's hear from you. What economic policy decisions do you want our national or state leaders to make? Whether it's taxes or trade or certain investments, if you were an economic advisor to the president or the governor, what would you tell them? Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Our Economic Roundup panel includes Jeff Feingold, editor at New Hampshire Business Review. Jeff, thank you for being here. Really appreciate it.
Great to be here, Laura.
Also with us, Russ Tebow, president of Applied Economic Research, an economic and real estate consulting firm based in Laconia. Russ, thanks for making the trip. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you, Laura.
And also with us on the phone, Brian Gottlob, principal of Polycon Research, an economic research firm based in Dover. And Brian, thank you for taking time out.
Great to be here, Laura.
Well, all of you, very quickly, let's talk about some national policy trends first, and then we'll shift to some of the many economic debates taking place here in the state. Let's start nationally and with the federal government shutdown. Now, just to let everybody know, we're doing a whole program on this tomorrow, and we have lots of other economic trends to cover with you guys today. So just briefly for now, a lot more detail tomorrow. Jeff Feingold, to you first. What's the most obvious impact of this shutdown on New Hampshire?
Well, first of all, you know, there's several thousand federal employees in New Hampshire, and I know you have a personal interest in one of them.
Yeah, full disclosure, my husband works for the federal government, so we're one of those families tightening up a bit. Luckily for us, I'm working.
And this is exactly what my point is, that this is affecting New Hampshire's economy, maybe not on a grand scale, but enough, you know, on a micro scale where, you know, these people are just, they're not being paid, they're not able to shop, they're not able to, you know, pay their bills. In some cases, we'll see whether they can pay their rent after they don't get a paycheck later this, I guess, week. It's on that level. It's a depressing thing. I'm not talking about economically depressing so much, but it kind of brings down things a little bit, you know, in terms of just being able to, you know, retailers specifically are being affected on some level about this. It's not a grand thing, but it's an important thing to think about.
So there's the obvious impacts. Was it 3,000 or 4,000 federal workers
I think
in the state?
7,000.
7,000. Yeah. Okay, that's a lot.
But I was trying to figure out how many actually are affected by this. You know, by the shutdown, because not all of them are. You know, they're not all working for the same agency.
That's true. I've got a friend who works for Federal Highways, which is paid through gas taxes.
Yes.
So he's still working.
Yes.
So you know, and getting paid.
But if you think about it, it's still that's a lot of people. I mean, really, you know. Yeah. That does affect businesses on a small scale, but maybe on a larger scale. And if I was a landlord, what do you do when someone can't pay the rent?
Trickle down effects, Russ.
I think it's like being a child in a divorce situation that's not going well, a divorce that's not going well. By that I mean this whole thing about Congress and the president and just this logjam. I think it kind of is very dysfunctional, and I think it spreads into, for example, the stock market. I think it's one of the factors that you know, the inability of us to have a cogent economic policy at the national level, not even be able to pay our workers that, you know, that work in our prisons and your husband and whatever, is a sign of that it's disturbing, and it's disturbing that you wonder, well, is there going to be even more chaos going forward? This is bad enough, but it's getting close to being the longest on record. And so I think that beyond the direct impact of some of the 7,000 workers in New Hampshire not getting paid, which is very serious in and of itself, I think more the broader impact of it in terms of our confidence in government to function well is also an impact.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the stock market, because we do want to look at some of those national economic trends in our first segment, and then we'll focus more on some state economic policy debates that are for sure going to happen in the legislature this year. But very quickly to you too, Brian Gottlob, please, the federal government shutdown's impact here in the Granite State.
Yeah, you know, I don't think that it overall in a macroeconomic from a macroeconomic perspective, it has a big impact, but it has some real impacts, as you know, on individuals, families, and on individual businesses. You know, there are things that we don't really think about, SBA loans that might not get processed. And there's one really interesting thing I was thinking about. One of the industries that's going to be affected is the brewing industry, and we have a niche economy with microbrewers in the state. The Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau isn't operating, and that has to approve all permits. And not only that, they approve every single label that goes on a can of beer.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. So it's just one of those things. And, you know, because it's all about me, I'm thinking I go to the U.S. Census Bureau and the International Trade Association to get data, and there's a sign on their website that says, you know, we're shut down, nothing is going to be updated. So it has kind of a ripple effect on a lot of smaller businesses in a lot of ways that we don't think about, in addition to the real economic impacts it has on individuals, families, and businesses. But I agree with Russ 100%. I think the real damage here is in terms of confidence, confidence in the business community, confidence in individuals, and our ability to deal with our own issues.
Well, again, we'll be talking about the shutdown a lot more tomorrow. And listeners, we want to hear about the impact it's having on you right now or your concerns down the road. Send us an email before the show to exchange@nhpr.org or post on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. How are you affected? What are your questions about this? Again, it's exchange@nhpr.org. So, gentlemen, a couple other national policy matters that will be felt here in New Hampshire economically. Lots of attention recently to an economic slowdown in China. And Brian Gottlob, to you first, because I know you've been looking at this data. Where is this being felt here in the Granite State?
Yeah, you know, we're relatively fortunate. And I say that with some caveats, because anytime you say that New Hampshire is relatively less affected negatively, there's always businesses, individual businesses, that will feel some extreme effects. But there's a couple of factors that sort of mitigate the impact right now that it's having on New Hampshire. One, we have a relatively low percentage of state exports that go to China. We're about at 7% in 2017. That's a little bit below the U.S. average. There are some states, some farm states in particular, that have much higher level of exports to China. So on the export end, we haven't been affected that dramatically yet. And on the opposite end, in terms of imports, we're also very low. New Hampshire's really been, we've lucked out a little bit in the trade wars to this point, because our exports largely go to countries, or a majority of them go to countries where we've had a little bit less friction, trade friction. We've dropped our exports to North America, Canada, and Mexico. It's been declining for about 20 years. We tend to export a lot more now to Europe, and there are issues there, but they haven't been as dramatic as the ones with, say, the North American Free Trade Agreement or China. So we've been a little bit better off so far. However, you know, the tariffs on Chinese imports are scheduled to increase from 10% to 25% in March. It was originally January. Now it's been pushed back based on some hopefulness in negotiations. But if that happens, far more companies are going to feel the impact.
Well, we spoke yesterday with Governor Sununu's Commissioner of the Department of Business and Economic Affairs, Taylor Caswell, and host Peter Biello, he was filling in for me yesterday, asked Caswell if recent tariffs from the Trump administration were being felt in the New Hampshire economy. Caswell said absolutely yes, by the fact that they increase costs across many sectors. Let's hear.
It's the kind of thing that is going to start showing up and has started showing up on the customer side of the equation, particularly in the construction business. The cost of steel, the cost to construct, the cost of to do some of these expansions that we're talking about. I mean, we're seeing financing structures that are being put together by businesses that want to expand that change on a regular basis in an upward direction, largely because of material costs that are being affected by the tariffs. So, yeah, in a lot of different ways, we're definitely seeing the impacts.
Again, that's Taylor Caswell, head of the Department of Business and Economic Affairs, speaking on the exchange yesterday. Jeff Feingold, switching from the slowdown in China to this broader discussion about trade deals and tariffs in general, how are these affecting New Hampshire?
Well, they are having an effect on New Hampshire, and part of it is not because of the cost of imported steel necessarily, but because U.S. steelmakers who are making the steel in the United States, they have seen the opportunity to raise their prices. So you have a situation where price of steel maybe is going up 10% because of the tariffs, or eventually 25% or whatever it's going to be, but in the end, that cost is being raised. That price is being, they see the opportunity of raising that price 10, 15, 20%, whatever, the manufacturers in the United States. We saw a specific example in Dover not too long ago. They were trying to build a culvert, and it came in about $1.5 million or much higher than they expected because of the cost of steel.
Oh, interesting. And we have a lot of high-tech manufacturing in this state, so I'm imagining some of those components are made out of steel.
Yes, and the Business Review, we've talked to manufacturers who have to, they rely on suppliers overseas to supply specific kinds of steel that are and aluminum that are not made in the United States, and they're allowed to apply for exemptions, but we've tried tracking them, and in most cases they either don't get it because of the shutdown. I don't even know where that stands in terms of getting an exemption on these kind of these being able to import things without the tariffs.
Russ, I can go ahead and jump in, and then Brian, I can hear you want to jump in too. Go ahead, Russ.
Okay. I just think that it's part and parcel of the economic landscape, the international economic landscape changing so much. Tariffs are part of it, slowdown in China's economy, slowdown in Europe's economy. The whole landscape has shifted. It's kind of like, is this the beginning? Are these Teutonic plates going to end up being, an earthquake? Are we going to get through this okay? Because
I think the World Bank just downgraded its economic forecast for the global economy for this year and next year.
So, there are a lot of shifting parts right now. So it creates some of them are budgetary, federal budgetary, with huge deficits. Some of them are the trade wars. Some of them are just the international slowdown. So there's a lot of moving parts right now. So it's kind of hard to figure out where they're going to sugar down to. Are we going to be better off? I mean, New Hampshire got hit hard in terms of losing jobs to China in the decade of the 2000s. Manufacturing jobs just shifted out of the state. We were, among the top five states getting that hit. So in a way, you could say, well, maybe the tariffs are a good thing and we'll avoid that kind of hit again. We just don't know yet.
Yeah, but there does seem to be this general unease about the international economy. And as you seem to be saying, Russ, that's having some trickle downs here in the Granite
State.
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of moving parts right now.
Yeah, go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I think that there are more headwinds now that people are becoming aware of. We've come through a period where there's a lot of economic tailwinds pushing us to higher levels of growth, and now that's kind of reversed, and we're seeing a whole lot more headwinds. The thing that really troubles me more than anything else is that at a national level, our economic policy seems to be turning into those headwinds. We're exacerbating some of those issues. The slowdown in the world economy, China, Germany, all showing signs of weakening economic activity. And I guess most troubling is that we have national policymakers who seem to view the world economy as a zero-sum game. If we benefit or somebody else benefits, then we lose. If we benefit, somebody else loses. And that's just not the way it works. we are all better off when the overall world economy is stronger.
The old rising tide lifting all boats. You know, speaking of this China issue, tariffs, and what you said, Russ, about, you know, does it help us? Does it hurt us? Does it help them? Does it hurt them? NPR's Morning Edition host Stephen Skeep spoke recently with Kevin Hassett. He's chair of the White House Council of Economic Advisors about trade with China. And Inskeep asked Hassett, who's hurting more from this tariff war, the U.S. or China? Let's hear.
Oh, China is definitely suffering more than we are because of the tariffs. And the way to think about it is that suppose you put a tariff on a product and that there's a Chinese firm and most of their sales are in the U.S., but we in the U.S. buy it from lots of different countries. Then it doesn't really affect us much to put a tariff on China, but it really affects the firms.
Although it also it raises the price of every item of that good in the United States, right? If you're buying
The point is that suppose that firm had, you know, 1% of the market in the U.S. and it was competitive to get the other 99%, then you wouldn't expect to see much of a price move. And so what we have seen are really, really big price moves for, like, the value of Chinese stocks that are affected by tariffs, but very, very little sign that the tariffs have had a negative effect on consumers in the U.S.
Again, that's White House Council of Economic Advisors member Kevin Hassett speaking on Morning Edition. And Brian Gottlieb, so that kind of feeds into what you were just saying. We shouldn't look at, you know, all these trade wars and tariffs and so forth as, you know, let's ding them so that we benefit. Seems like you said a minute ago, nobody benefits from this.
Yeah, it's a notion that it's a zero-sum game. Anytime China's economy benefits, somehow the U.S. economy loses and vice versa. There's a slowdown in China, no doubt. One of the effects of that is you hear Apple reporting lower expected earnings for the first time in who knows how long.
Right. Big headline recently.
Right. Exactly. And then you see Samsung, which is a Korean maker of electronics, is affected in reporting slower earnings. So you see the ripple effects, and that illustrates, I think, perfectly the fact that, with the connections, the interconnections, the supply chains, et cetera, we all benefit when each of these economies is stronger. And that's not to say that China doesn't have issues with taking U.S. companies' technology and all of that, but that doesn't mitigate the overall issue, which is that when those economies are stronger, the U.S. economy generally benefits, and we shouldn't be looking to weaken the Chinese economy. We should be looking to strengthen all world economies.
Go ahead, Jack.
I just want to say that, you know, in New Hampshire, just to think about New Hampshire manufacturers,
sure.
You know, a lot of them are small manufacturers, and they've worked really hard to open up international markets, and a lot of them found China to be a good market. And because of the retaliation on China's part, they're finding it much more difficult to sell their products over to China. And if that's one of their main customers, that's affecting them, you know, pretty dramatically. And, you know, that's the kind of thing where, what, you know, when you talk about it on a big worldview, you know, when you hear the Mr. Bassett talking about that stuff, we're just talking about little companies that are really affected by this and sometimes get swallowed up in this whole thing. But that's really what the effects of these trade wars having on even small firms or just a few, maybe a couple hundred employees that might be getting hammered because they lose a major customer.
And I think Brian told us at the beginning of the show that 7% of New Hampshire exports go to China. That's not a lot, but it's not a little either.
Exactly. There are companies that depend on having customers in China.
Go ahead, Russ.
Yeah, it's long been the case, Brian's point, that the, you know, free trade means the pie for everybody is bigger. But I think underneath that, that's sort of the textbook analysis, and not to disagree with Brian directly. But at the same time, I think you have to have a bedrock of fair trade underneath that concept. And I'm not convinced that China has been a fair trader with us.
Well,
it's much harder to sell an American car in China than maybe a Korean car in America, a Kia in America. That's not hard to do. But selling a Ford in Korea might be very difficult. So I think that I'd like to have more confidence that we are dealing on an even playing field with China. And I'm not convinced that that's the case.
All right. Coming up, one more national trend that I want to ask you guys about, and that is the gyrations that we saw in the stock market at the end of last year, what we're seeing this year. So we'll talk about that. And then we'll turn to New Hampshire economic policies that we are for sure going to hear a lot about in the new year, from business taxes to workforce development to wages. All that's coming up, and of course, we want to hear from you. It's your turn to be an economic policy advisor. 1-800-892-3900. 6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org.
Our mission is to support the communities we serve, and that's so aligned to what NHPR does.
Wendy Beswick, Vice President of Marketing for Service Credit Union.
Hampshire Public Radio is all about being in the community, talking to the community, and so we feel like it's just a great place for us to get out in front of people who may not know about the credit union.
Learn more about NHPR's corporate support program at nhpr.org/underwrite.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, it's our New Hampshire Economic News Roundup, and we're looking at economic policy and how the choices made nationally and in the state might affect our economy this year. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. What economic policy decisions do you want our leaders to make in the new year? Whether it's trade or certain investments or taxes, if you were advising the president or the governor, what would you tell them? Again, 1-800-892-6477. Our New Hampshire Economic Roundup panel includes Jeff Feingold, editor of the New Hampshire Business Review, Brian Gottlob, principal of Polycon Research, and Russ Thibault, president of Applied Economic Research. And gentlemen, I do want to turn to a lot of the state economic policy issues that have been coming up a lot, especially since the governor's inaugural address. He touched on the economy a lot. But one more national trend, Russ Thibault, I'm going to kick it off with you, that we should look at is the stock market. At the end of last year, the market took a dive, has seemed unsteady since then. With a few weeks' hindsight, Russ, what are economists saying might have caused this?
Well, there are a number of points, and if you'll excuse me, I'm going to kind of rattle them off. The stock market trend has been negative. That sort of gets you a little worried. The Fed is tightening money supply, raising interest rate. That hurts the stock market. The sugar high from the tax cut is fading in terms of its
sugar
impact.
Sugar high. I haven't heard it called that. That's good, Russ.
Tariffs have been rising. Global economic growth is slow. Housing market is weak. Tech sector is weak. So there's a lot of factors that are working. And I sort of sit there and you wonder, is it just that this is a correction for past overindulgence?
Exuberance.
Right. Yeah. Irrational exuberance. Or is it a forward-looking sign that says we're heading into troubled waters? And we don't know that yet. It's sort of like you're laying in bed and there's a noise outside. You're not sure whether it's really dangerous or innocuous. But it's of concern. And I think that if you look at the fundamentals of the U.S. economy, everything looks great. GDP growth is good. Unemployment rate in November was a 49-year low. Wage growth is starting to pick up. In New Hampshire, personal income was up 5% year over year.
Oh, that's a lot.
So the numbers look great. But I was talking with a New Hampshire banker just yesterday, and he said, you know, myself, a prominent banker, he said, myself and other bankers are kind of, we're being much more cautious right now. So I think, a lot of people get their clues about the economy from the stock market because it's measured every day. GDP figures come out once a quarter. The stock market is there every day. A lot of people, through either directly or indirectly with their 401ks, have a stake in the market, and a lot of people are nervous right now in New Hampshire.
Brian, what do you think? Any thoughts on either what might have caused this or whether it's going to sort of calm down now?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to calm down. I think we're in a period of pretty high volatility in the stock market. But the stock market is generally forward-looking. So Russ is absolutely right. We've got a lot of really positive economic indicators right now. GDP growth is, you know, going to be 3% for 2018. But if you take a look a little bit underneath that, you see some things that are a little bit troubling. The stock market is really driven by the earnings of companies, and earnings of companies over the last year have really got a big boost because of the tax cut. You know, a 35% down to 21% tax cut really made corporate earnings pop. So we're coming off of that. So this next year's comparables, the increase in earnings isn't going to get that big boost. Costs are rising for companies. For good reasons, wage growth is increasing, but also things like tariffs. So their margins are being reduced. If you actually look at what their organic earnings growth is, meaning not from extraordinary events like tax cuts or anything like that, they've actually slowed quite a bit, and I think that's reflected in the market's outlook. And then you've got all these other issues that are just weighing, as Russ points out. There's a lot of uncertainties out there. The stock market hates that. What's going to happen with trade? Interest rates look like they're not going to rise as much. And I'll go on record here. I think by the end of 2019, we may even see the reversal of some of those rate increases. But there's a lot of things that are weighing on the market. It's not going to be a smooth sail. And I will say, and this is, more troubling perhaps, is we're, for the S&P, the Standard & Poor's Index, we're down about 20%. And if you look historically, that correlates with about a two-thirds chance of a recession in the year following that kind of decline. So that's a little bit of an ominous indicator.
All right. Well, I want to turn to state economic policy, gentlemen, because this has been big news already in this still brand new year. Lots of focus on the economy by the governor in his inaugural address. The legislature is getting settled in, and they're looking at some key economic policies. And then the exchange, as I said earlier, talked with Taylor Caswell just yesterday. He's head of the Department of Business and Economic Affairs. So lots to look at there. Let's tackle a couple major issues. First of all, guys, workforce. And we have talked about this almost every single time since we've gotten together, especially last year, about the struggle employers have to find the right workers. Jeff Feingold, kicking it off with you, please. Where does that struggle stand now at the beginning of 2019?
It's where it was at the beginning of 2018 and probably 2017.
Really?
It's just there's no light at the end of the tunnel at this point. We have a 2.6 unemployment rate, percent unemployment rates, which is the third lowest in the country. It's even by New Hampshire standards, it's extremely low. There's been just demand for employees in just about every industry you could think of. And there's really what a lot of people call the pipeline of workers is just not there. And it's just not robust enough to help employers who are still, because the economy is doing so well, are looking to expand, are looking to add new kinds of products, and they, a lot of them are stymied by this, even now, and it's a problem that requires a multifaceted solution. The governor addressed some of this in his inaugural address about when it comes to education, job training. Democrats are going to be doing that in the Senate and the House, doing the same kinds of things. But it also involves affordable housing. It involves a lot of other aspects of the economy that, it's a big thing on the plate of the legislature and the governor coming up this session.
Well, and you talked about pipeline. When we talked to Taylor Caswell yesterday, he talked about pathways between education and education and employment, saying that was really important for him. Let's hear a little bit.
What we're looking to do at my department is find new partnerships within what I refer to as the triangle, where we actively engage employers, state policymakers, and academic institutions to create legitimate pathways that line workforce and people up to participate in the high growth sectors that we're seeing in the state of New Hampshire, and to be able to have them take advantage of that on a personal level. But then we use it on a very regular basis in the recruitment and expansion conversations that we're having with companies in New Hampshire, to be able to say, look at what we're doing, to be able to take a long view of your long-term needs to supply the workforce that you need here in New Hampshire.
Again, talking about workforce pathways or pipelines, what's your take, Russ Tebow?
Well, there's a little tiny bit of a crack maybe that's developing, that's a positive crack, maybe a bridge more than a crack, which is that if you look at the most recent data from Employment Security, we actually bumped up our labor force by 15,000 people. And for the first time in a long time, that matched the amount of job growth in the state. We added around 15,000 jobs, and the labor force, which is the number of people working or looking for work, also increased by 15,000. So it didn't get worse year over year. Didn't get a lot better, but it didn't get worse. And I think part of it is the other indicator is total personal income in New Hampshire was up 5.1% third quarter to third quarter. And that's the fastest rate of growth east of Colorado. You got to go all the way to Colorado from New Hampshire to find a state that's had stronger income growth. So what may be finally happening here is employers are waking up to say, oh, gee, I guess I've got to pay to play. And
we've talked about that a lot also on this show.
Yeah, and maybe it's starting to happen. The participation rate has gone up because we can't just shift people from blue-collar jobs to turn everybody into a, you know, a systems analyst. We got to have more people.
And those educational pathways that, that Commissioner Caswell talks
about. That's important, but we also need to have more people. Not only to have them better skilled, but have more people, generally speaking.
Talking about the wages, we got an email from Arnie who says, are wages rising for workers at the lower end of the New Hampshire job market? Brian Gottlob, do you know?
Yeah, they actually have, and I looked at this not that long ago. I looked at wage rates for individuals in various hospitality sectors, restaurants, lodging workers, compared to workers in other industries. And it was actually at the low end where the wages were rising the highest. And when I say that, if somebody goes from $8 to $9 an hour, that's a pretty huge jump. In percentage terms. But, you know, in terms of meaningful on their impact on their well-being, it may not be as significant. But, yes, and, you know, if you talk to employers, they'll tell you the same thing. I mean, they have to raise wages in order to compete for a limited supply of workers. But, you know, as much as we have talked about the labor issue, who among us would have last January said that we would have over 2% employment growth based on what we knew about the labor force and labor shortages? So we've done remarkably well. And I would add that something to what Russ said is that, the labor force has grown. I'm a little skeptical of the numbers because if you go back historically, they get adjusted. A big factor is the resumption of in-migration, and I know we're going to talk about that, the resumption of in-migration into New Hampshire. So sure, we're drawing more people. We're out of the labor force, but we're also resuming the in-migration of skilled, well-educated people into the state, and that has really been the key over the last several decades to New Hampshire expanding its labor force.
Go ahead, Russ.
Another thing that's interesting that's going on that's different is if year over year we've added about 5,000 jobs in construction and manufacturing. Those are high-paying jobs. And for better or worse, year over year, one sector of the economy that had been growing rapidly in New Hampshire got zero growth, which is retailing. So, you know, we have a lot of retail stores. So we're kind of losing jobs in the retail sector, which is low-paying jobs, and gaining jobs in the higher-paying construction and manufacturing. And that's a good trend, and it's probably contributing to this income growth that I mentioned earlier.
Again, our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Today, it's our New Hampshire Economic News Roundup. We're looking at some of the policies that will drive economic discussions this year at the national and state level. And we're focusing on state policies right now in terms of workforce development, housing, and so forth. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. What economic policies do you want to see the state adopt this year, whether it's wages or housing or transportation? Again, you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. The governor, in his inaugural address recently, touted a recent study by UNH, and Brian, I think you just hinted at it, which found an increase in that coveted 20-something demographic. I want to hear from everybody on this, because this is a big, big issue. But Brian, you first, because I know you've been looking at the numbers.
Yeah, I mean, it was great news. It was in part great news because, and Laura, you've heard me talk about this in the past, I think some of the notions of New Hampshire's demographic demise have been wildly overblown over the last decade. The trends, I don't believe, were as drastic or dramatic as a lot of people had thought. But the good news is, we're seeing a resumption of people moving into the state, which over the last 30 years has really been the key to New Hampshire's economic labor force growth, a growth in our talent in terms of the skill level of our workforce. So that's picked up. But, you know, the real interesting aspect of it is that we've moved down a little bit in terms of the age distribution of those who are moving into New Hampshire. Traditionally, our big demographic the people who move into New Hampshire have traditionally, by and large, been people kind of in their early working careers, but 30 to 44, 45, married with kids. That's moved down a little bit. We're seeing a little bit more of the 25 to 29-year-olds moving into the state, which is great. The one caveat about that, it's both a caveat and instructive, is that they're moving to a relatively few locations in the state. It's more concentrated. And I think for policymakers, what they need to do is to take a look at what aspects of those areas that are receiving that kind of in-migration, both 30 to 44, but also that younger demographic, what aspects of those regions are leading to the kinds of in-migration that we all want to see more of. And that would really be beneficial for policymakers. I have some ideas on that, but I'll let others speak.
Well, and Jeff, go ahead. There was a lot of cheering about this around the State House, no matter what the political party.
Yeah, obviously, because we've been hearing this, as Brian was saying, we've been hearing for many years how we're just getting older and older and older in New Hampshire, and nobody's coming here to move anymore. And as he said, and it's true, is that for 30, maybe even 40 years, New Hampshire's economy started growing and it became robust because of this in-migration of people who came to New Hampshire because of cheaper housing or whatever reason, and they had job opportunities. And the interesting thing to think about is that so many of those people are coming from Massachusetts, because the Massachusetts economy, just as it was in the 80s and 90s, is really the engine for certainly this part of New England, and New Hampshire reaps the benefits of a healthy Massachusetts economy. And the healthier Massachusetts economy is, the healthier New Hampshire's economy is going to be, especially, as Brian said, in the southern part of the state, because most of those young people are moving to Stratford, Rockingham counties, Hillsborough County. And that's something that we have to remember. When we're talking about people moving to New Hampshire, it's just basically that part of New Hampshire. It's not the Lakes region. It's not the North Country. It's not necessarily the western part of the state. Perhaps some younger people are moving to the Upper Valley, but
sure,
not on these, not at these levels.
The college and the medical center.
So it's really good news, but people are old enough, as Russ and I are, to remember the phrase the Golden Triangle. From the southern part of the state there, the seacoast, southern New Hampshire,
Portsmouth, Nashville, Manchester, maybe Concord, yeah.
That's really where they're going, is the Golden Triangle. It's not the whole state.
Does it trickle up eventually, Russ? I mean, if Portsmouth is booming, eventually, do some of those young people say, we're tired of the prices or whatever, let's move to the Lakes region?
I don't know if they moved to the Lakes region, but they moved. Maybe they have been moving to Dover.
Brian's backyard.
Brian knows very well. And now maybe Rochester. So it does kind of spread out, and it's driven by housing costs versus commuting hassles. I'm kind of surprised. One of the surprises in this kind of trend that we've had is that we haven't had more people jumping the border for cheaper housing, which, as Jeff and mentioned, that's traditionally been why you move to New Hampshire. Maybe lifestyle, but less expensive housing, and you tolerate the commute. And we've been spending a lot of money on our highway system, on Interstate 93 and on the Turnpike, so you would expect to see more of the migration in. Yet some of my builder clients are saying, it's much easier for me to sell homes in Massachusetts than New Hampshire.
Really?
Yeah.
Even with the increase.
And I don't know exactly why. I think that part of it is that the buyers are more at the high end, and they have a lot of cash, or they did until the stock market debacle. But it's been surprising. I mean, we still have the dynamic of much higher housing prices close to Boston than in New Hampshire. So there's an economic incentive to move to the state, but it hasn't been happening in this recovery as strongly, as Jeff said, as strongly as in the past.
Well, after a short break, I do want to look more closely at housing, because that's another big topic that we all talked about on the Economic News Roundup last year. And from what I'm reading, there's maybe some shifts coming. Also, guys, we haven't talked yet about business taxes. That's going to be a point of contention between the governor and the legislature this year. So all that's coming up, plus your questions and comments. You can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. This This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, the shutdown's impact on the Granite State. Send us your stories and questions before the show so we can include them tomorrow. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. This hour, it's the New Hampshire Economic News Roundup, and we've been covering state and national economic policies that will affect the economy here in the state in the new year. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Our email again, exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook or Twitter is NHPR Exchange. And gentlemen, let's focus more on housing now specifically. We were just starting to go there, so let's continue. And Brian Gottlob, to you, you have said that it's not state policy that will attract this young demographic that seems to be returning to New Hampshire. It's local policy. It's community decisions. And I'm guessing, Brian, that housing is a big part of that. So go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would argue it probably has its biggest impact on the very demographic that, you know, New Hampshire's most concerned about attracting, which is individuals early in their working lives, younger individuals. And, you know, I've looked at this an awful lot, Laura, and you can see the impact demographically of the absence or availability of, in particular, rental housing in communities across New Hampshire. And I look mostly at the southern part because that's where most of the demographic activity is occurring. But communities that have made an effort to allow rental housing, because when you look at, you know, young people, millennials in particular, a lot of them are delaying the home buying, their home buying activity. They want to check out an area. So communities like mine, Dover, which has added an awful lot of quality rental opportunities, have seen an influx of a younger demographic. And that has brought kind of a virtuous cycle where you get those younger people and you see the kinds of things that younger people want to see in a community, restaurants, social activities. So on the other side, you look at communities that are doing quite well, and I use one example. I apologize for people in the audience, but Stratham. You know, a lot of excellent economic activity in Stratham and the surrounding areas, Portsmouth, but their demographic has continued to age pretty significantly, primarily, I believe, because if you want to live there, you have to buy a $500,000 or $600,000 home instead of having the opportunity to live in a rental. So they're missing out on those young professionals who might be working in the community. So rental housing, and it's not just cheap rental housing. Affordability is important, but it's quality, because there's plenty of places in the state that have very low cost, not very attractive rental opportunities. So
that's interesting.
It's quality,
yeah.
Opportunities. I use this term, the best economic developer in the state is a developer named Eric Chinberg. Wherever he goes and puts his apartments in, he redevelops mill buildings, a lot of good demographic things happen after.
It's interesting what you say, Brian. You know, think about people who are in that phase of their lives. They want to check out an area. They don't want to buy a house right now, especially a big old house that they might not need. So I hear what you're saying. Let's go to our listeners. Tim is calling in from one of those hot housing areas, Tim in Portsmouth. Hi, Tim. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I really like your show. So a minute ago, I was listening to one of your guests try to be baffled about why it was difficult to sell a property in New Hampshire and for various different reasons. And what you guys are doing, and I want to get some feedback from your panel, is you seem to be overlooking the elephant in the room. You're set to discuss business taxes when what we really should be discussing in this state is property taxes. So, you know, somebody who lives in Massachusetts in a $300,000 house and they pay $2,500 a year in property taxes, and then they want to move to New Hampshire, and the same house requires $5,000 to $6,000 a year in property taxes. That makes a difference.
Sure, and, although that Massachusetts person is paying income taxes.
Well, here's the thing. We might want some people to move up here that still continue to – I work in the Golden Triangle, and I live in Mount Vernon. My wife works in Kingsborough over the border,
yeah,
as a teacher, because even with the income tax that she has to pay, she makes more money.
So you get two hits, don't you, Tim? You pay property taxes in New Hampshire and income taxes in Massachusetts.
Exactly. But we don't live in the Golden Triangle, and housing is still cheap in the south central part of the state. But of course, I get in my truck and drive 62 miles to the Golden Triangle to make my living because that's where I make more money.
Sure. Gotcha. Tim, thank you for the call, and thanks for disrobing the elephant in the room. I appreciate it. Property taxes, Russ. Go ahead.
Yeah, they do affect housing. Unquestionably, the affordability of housing is influenced by property taxes because that's part of the qualification process. I have a son that lives in Massachusetts. He rents. He has a low-middle-income job, I would say. And he gets a tax credit because of that. Even though he rents, he gets an income tax credit for being a low-income renter. We have no such thing in New Hampshire that affects, the affordability of housing. If you are looking to buy in New Hampshire, that property tax, the high property taxes we have, enters into your qualification standards. I mean, if you really look at it, we have two problems, housing problems in New Hampshire. One is we don't have enough housing. I've done the math. If you wanted to get vacancy rates back to normal levels, they're very low, both for rental and ownership housing.
I think in some cities in New Hampshire, it's almost zero.
Virtually, yeah.
Rate.
It's kind of like, is the paint dry? Okay, you can move in, you know. But if you want to get that back to normal and you want to get the labor force back to maybe a 4% rate, you're looking at 20,000 new housing units that we need. And we're only building 3,000 a year. So we have a huge deficit in terms of the amount of housing.
Although when you say building, Russ, and we've talked about this a lot on the show in 2018 as well, does building mean breaking new ground, building a new building, or does it mean taking some of those big old houses in Stratham that Brian mentioned and turning those into rental units or a shared situation?
Yeah, we do have that ability to convert housing. This legislature last term, broadened the ability to do that. An accessory dwelling unit is the official term. But I think that, by and large, that's been kind of marginal in terms of its ability to increase the supply of housing. We have in downtowns a lot of downtown buildings, a lot of mill buildings that are being converted into housing. So we're adding to the stock, but not enough
to really have a dent in
affordability.
Let's get your take on this, Jeff Eingold.
Yeah, I have to say that one of the interesting things that Tim raises is the idea that he mentioned business taxes, and that's something that Democrats, the linkage between business taxes and property taxes, something that Democrats are going to be raising this session. Representative Susan Almy up in the Upper Valley, she's the new chair of the House Ways and Means Committee. She wants to basically roll back these business profits tax cuts, not the business enterprise tax, but the business profits tax cuts. Her argument is that the state is basically needs more revenue to cover many of the services, especially involving the opioid crisis and involving education, that local property taxpayers are bearing the burden. They're bearing an increasing burden.
So to reduce addressing downshifting.
Yes. So
costs to communities that the state used to pick up.
Yeah, because they're seeing it in their property tax increase. And it's an interesting argument because, you mentioned this about, I was just going to say, it's about the business tax cuts. The proposal is to basically, her proposal basically is to roll it back to 8.5, which I think in a real world is probably a non-starter. But Senator D'Alessandro is on the Senate side is looking to basically stop the business profits tax cuts because there's a couple of more going forward and saying, look, we've lowered the business taxes enough. Let's focus on some other issues because we need the revenue to address these other issues. And many of those issues do relate to communities having to subsidize the state for not providing the kind of services that they used to or should be expected to do.
That's really interesting. So our caller, Tim, talking about, never mind business taxes, let's talk about property taxes, and you're saying a lot of lawmakers are kind of making the connection between the two.
Yes.
Very interesting. Tim, thank you again. Good to hear from you. Marty from the Lakes Region says, don't forget childcare to attract and retain talent to New Hampshire. We also need quality childcare that is accessible to all. Marty, thank you for that email. And then Sheila called from Vermont. She says, is there a designated living wage in New Hampshire? If so, what is it? Is it lower in New Hampshire than in Vermont? Jeff, is there a living wage in New Hampshire designated?
No, like by a state designated? No, there certainly
or
is.
Or by certain policy groups that sometimes say, look, you have to make X dollars
I do believe it's in the very high teens, if I remember correctly, and it's like nowhere near what the minimum wage is, which is now $7.25. Although there are proposals coming this year to raise the minimum wage. Senator Susi, the Senate president, is going to be sponsoring a bill to raise it to $10 an hour. But, you know, that doesn't come anywhere near what a living wage would be in New Hampshire, especially considering what we just talked about, housing costs.
Thanks for those emails. Again, our email address is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org or call 1-800-892-6477. Go ahead, Russ.
Yeah. The Housing Finance Authority has done some calculations of rent versus incomes in the counties in the state.
Looking at this issue of affordability that our
emailer affordability. And only, I think, in some counties, only 20% of the households make enough money to afford the median-priced rental unit. It ranges from county to county. And surprisingly, the gap is very high in Coos County, because although rents are low, incomes are lower yet. So you're looking at, affordability. When you talk about a living wage, a big part of that is going to be housing costs and utility costs. And what this is saying is that we're well below par in terms of the wage structure relative to housing costs.
Well, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and there is a direct correlation between that gap and how much money someone has to pay for rent or for housing in a community. I know in Manchester, it's over 30%. Of people's income goes to rent in many cases, and that's directly related to the increase in homelessness.
Wow. Okay. Well, Josh in Manchester called and left us this note. He says, millennials are interested in culture, including food, music, and beer. Josh, I would add to that wine, since I don't really like beer. Sorry, I know that's not cool, because beer is the thing these days.
Gourmet food. Right.
Yeah, right. But Brian, you've looked at this a lot and written about it. It's about housing. It's about transportation. It's about property taxes that Tim or Carla mentioned. But it's about it's about a lot more.
Yeah, and your email guest was right on. When you look at the things that seem to be driving the location decisions of millennials, obviously, it's opportunities, job opportunities. But increasingly, it is areas and communities that offer a variety of amenities. Those are primarily social amenities, the opportunity to interact with other young people. Dining is a big part of the attractiveness. Recreational, social, cultural amenities. So communities that offer kind of a rich variety of amenities, and thinking of a place like Portsmouth, which obviously is a high cost community, but increasingly in a place like my community, Dover, which has benefited from the people moving from or not in being priced out of Portsmouth, moving to Dover. But as a result of that, again, it created kind of a virtuous cycle where we see more social opportunities, more cultural activities, more recreational and dining opportunities. So he's absolutely right. Those are key factors. And when I talk about policies at the state level versus the local level, the state isn't going to make the determination about what kinds of amenities local communities offer.
Well,
local communities are going to make that decision.
You know, it's interesting. We talked just a second ago about wages, and boy, it's all connected, guys, because just recently, preparing for the show, I saw a lot of headlines about pubs, bars, restaurants closing. Now, this is a volatile business. Restaurants and bars close all the time, but it seemed to be a little bit more than usual. In Dover, Brian, where you live, there was a beloved brew pub that had to close. In Manchester, yep. Two pretty brand new trendy restaurants had to close. And all of the owners of these cited, Jeff Feingold, I'm looking at you because you live in Manchester, labor costs and the fact that they couldn't find people. They could not find people. And a couple promising bars and restaurants had to shut down.
That is true. And actually, there's another one was a 900 Degrees, which is based in Manchester. They also had one on the seacoast. They
I saw a lot of headlines in your paper
And
about
that is that is one of these. That's why having labor problems like we have is not healthy at all for the economy in the long run. You know, it's great to say we have a 2.6% unemployment rate, but that's not a good thing.
Yeah, it's a downward cycle then,
exactly.
Isn't it? Communities want these cool bars and restaurants to attract young people, but they can't find people to work there.
Yeah.
So
and I know of business. I know of some restaurants that have to cut back their hours because they don't have enough employees.
Absolutely.
It's not a good thing that we can't find enough people to work in these.
Go ahead, Russ.
Economic policy used to, at the state level, be attracting jobs. Mm-hmm. It has done a 180, and as Taylor Caswell mentioned yesterday on the show, it's now trying to attract people is the key in this state to economic development activity. Now, West Virginia is probably still trying to get jobs, but we need to get people. And I think that a lot of our policies are moving that way. We haven't talked about the minimum wage initiative that seems to be coming up.
Yeah, got a whole show planned for Monday.
Oh,
so
great.
Tuned
okay,
for
I'm going to listen because I want to learn more.
Well, very quickly, guys, and I'll turn to you first, Brian. What are you going to be looking at in terms of economic numbers or policy decisions in the next week or two?
Yeah, I'm going to be looking at the progress that's being made with the negotiations with China, because I think that's going to have a big impact on business confidence, also the stock market. So that's I think, going to be an important indicator moving forward of what's going to happen with the stock market, what's going to happen with confidence, and ultimately, how strongly downward pressures on the U.S. economy are felt.
Okay. How about you, Jeff? What are you going to be looking at?
Well,
lots to cover.
Actually, your topic for next week, because we've been covering this. There's several bills related to minimum wage, and one of them by Senator Susi, and that's going to be it'll be interesting to see how this happens, because the governor has said he's not a fan of that, and when this happens or if this happens, it'll be interesting to see what kind of confrontation there might be.
Yeah, New Hampshire Business Review will have a lot to cover. Minimum
yes.
wage, business taxes, workforce development,
family
housing,
medical leave, yes, is one
all
other
that.
One.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, how about you, Russ? What are you going to be looking at?
Short-term stock market and the shutdown, resolving the shutdown. A little bit longer-term Fed interest rate policies.
All right. We will talk about that the next time we meet in a month or so. It was great talking to all three of you. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Great to be here, Laura.
Thanks.
That's Jeff Feingold, Brian Gottlob, and Russ Tebow. And speaking of the shutdown, as Russ mentioned, I want to let everybody know we're going to be talking in more depth about the shutdown tomorrow. And we want to hear about the impact it's having on you right now or your concerns down the road. Send us an email before the show, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Or post on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. How are you affected? And what are your questions about it? Again, exchange@nhpr.org. We'd love for you to leave us a voicemail, too, anytime before our program tomorrow. The number is 1-800-892-6477. Again, leave a voicemail before the show tomorrow at 1-800-892-6477. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.